You're listening to a Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders 30th Anniversary Podcast. Founded in 1978, GLAAD is New England's leading legal rights organization dedicated to ending discrimination based on sexual orientation, HIV status, and gender identity and expression. For more information on this story and updates on GLAAD's current legal work, please visit our website at www.glaad.org.
Even as a child, Kate Wade Brodoff knew she could be proud of her family. Maureen Brodoff says around fourth grade, Kate started bringing newspaper articles about her family to school. And a year or so later, when Kate's class started talking about prominent local people, Kate talked about her mom's.
They went around the room and Kate voted for her parents. She said, well, my parents did this and talked about the adoption, and they went to court to make sure that they could both be full parents to me. And that was like, you know, it was a wonderful moment.
Kate's non-biological mom, Ellen Wade, adopted Kate as a second parent, thanks to GLAAD's 1993 victory in adoption of Susan. In its decision, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled that the unmarried partner of a child's biological parent can adopt the child and become a second legal parent without the biological parent giving up his or her rights. The court named the case Susan to protect Kate's anonymity. According to GLAAD Civil Rights Project Director Mary Bonato, early adoption cases and some of the original gay and lesbian civil rights cases were custody fights where people were leaving different sex marriages and wanted to continue caring for their children.
The question was whether their sexual orientation alone disqualified them from doing so. And there are some very brave people who did some very important work over the years, including GLAAD in a case in 1980, establishing that sexual orientation just by itself shouldn't be viewed as an impediment to somebody continuing to care for a child and raise a child.
Also in the 1980s, increased access to reproductive technology meant that lesbian couples could plan and start families on their own, and they did. In droves. Maureen Brodoff.
It was a big subject in the community because there were a lot of people, there was kind of a pent-up demand, a lot of people who'd been together for a long time, a lot of people who were coming out and being more open about who they were, and so that opened up the possibility of having lives like everybody else.
This lesbian baby boom not only changed the dynamics of childbearing and parenting, it also changed the legal landscape. With anonymous sperm donation, it was possible for two parents of the same sex to form families without the dissolution of a different sex relationship and the ensuing custody fight. But it introduced a new set of legal questions and challenges. In the mid-1980s, the Lesbian Rights Project of San Francisco, now the National Center for Lesbian Rights, or NCLR, pioneered a strategy in which lesbian couples used the step-parent adoption process. These cases involve lesbians adopting the biological child of one of the women or a child who had previously been adopted by one of the women. Just as in a step-parent adoption, the non-legal parent would petition to be a parent, and when that petition was granted, the child had two legal parents, the birth mother or initial adoptive mother and the second adopting mother. Vermont became the first eastern state to approve of second-parent adoption. In its opinion, the state Supreme Court stated, "This is not a matter which arises in a vacuum. Social fragmentation and the myriad configurations of modern families have presented us with new problems and complexities that cannot be solved by idealizing the past. Our paramount concern should be with the effect of our laws on the reality of children's lives. It is not the courts that have engendered the diverse composition of today's families, but it is the courts that are required to define, declare, and protect the rights of children raised in these families." Just a few months after the Vermont Supreme Court's historic ruling, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court approved of joint adoption petitions by unmarried petitioners, including lesbian parents. In the two cases decided, the adoption of Susan and another case, the adoption of Tammy, argued by local attorney Catherine Triantafilou, Massachusetts approved of a procedure in which both parents petition to adopt the child together without the existing legal parent losing any rights. But in 1993, Massachusetts and Vermont were outliers. In many states, parents were forced to choose between staying with their partners and maintaining custody of their children. In the worst cases, parents were deemed unfit for no other reason than their same-sex relationships. Just days before the Susan decision, a Virginia judge ruled that a lesbian mom named Sharon Bottoms was unfit to raise her 2-year-old son because of her immoral lesbian relationship. The court awarded custody to the child's grandmother, despite Bottoms' allegations that the grandmother had allowed her live-in boyfriend to sexually abuse Bottoms for years throughout her childhood. Maureen Brodoff and Ellen Wade met in law school in the mid-1970s. After 13 years together, they began planning for a family, and in 1989, Maureen gave birth to their daughter, Kate. By Kate's 4th birthday, Maureen and Ellen were fully immersed in the day-to-day lives of working moms, and already were knee-deep in soccer balls and storybooks. But even though Ellen was a mom in every other sense of the word, she still lacked a legal relationship with Kate. She read her stories and tucked her in at night, but as far as the law was concerned, she and her daughter were strangers. Mary Bonato.
Here are these two people who are raising you, who are doing all the hard work of being a parent, who are there for you. Why shouldn't they also have the legal responsibilities? And there are enormous benefits for the child should that parent die with respect to access to the parent's Social Security and inheritance and so on and so forth, as well as, you know, more mundane but extremely important things like access to health insurance and other workplace benefits. So it's so clearly good for the child as a legal matter, but as an emotional matter, extremely important to say, this is my family and nobody can change that. It's not just our private understanding. These, in fact, are my parents.
GLAAD filed a joint petition on behalf of Maureen and Ellen in the Massachusetts probate court, in which both parents sought to adopt Kate. They had a hearing in front of the chief judge of probate, who later denied the petition as unwarranted under Massachusetts' existing adoption law. In the judge's view, the only way to jointly petition for adoption was if the petitioners were a married couple, and in 1993, same-sex couples in Massachusetts couldn't marry. GLAAD appealed to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, which heard the case in May 1993. In their petition to adopt, Ellen and Maureen, who had both equally been a daily part of Kate's life since birth, underwent the same scrutiny as couples adopting children who are strangers to them. The family was monitored by social workers and evaluated by an adoption agency for a home study. At that time, says Maureen, it was even a challenge to find an adoption agency willing to do a home study of lesbian parents.
When GLAAD was trying to identify a social service agency that could do a home study for us, it wasn't clear that they would be able to locate one. You know, we've come a long way since then. But at that time, it was a very new idea. It hadn't been done before. And I think that bothered me that people might even refuse to come and look at our family.
Ellen Wade remembers the home study.
Well, it was invasive a bit, you know, an invasion of privacy. But we didn't feel we had anything to hide, and we felt like we had a good relationship with the social worker who, I mean, it could have been anybody. It might not have worked out. We weren't naive in the sense that we didn't know that the way these facts were presented could make a great deal of difference and that someone, even with the best of intentions, might not present them in the best possible way. But I think we actually felt like if there was any couple that was going to pass muster as potential adoptive parents, we felt like we were one of those couples.
They were. The adoption agency recommended the adoption, meaning that the last remaining hurdle was the court's decision. Waiting for the SJC decision, Ellen and Maureen were anxious. Maureen says that after the hour-long Supreme Judicial Court argument, life happened in slow motion. They spent their time waiting and waiting and waiting.
I can't even think of an analogy to it. Maybe when you're little waiting for Christmas, it seems like it's so far away, and you just have to put it out of your mind or something. But it sort of weighs on you. It's exciting. It's hopeful. You can get depressed. So it really plays a big part in your life, but nothing happens.
But the waiting paid off. Something did happen. The SJC decided both the Tammy case and the Susan case the same day, September 10th, 1993. In Tammy, the court held that the state adoption law allows adoption by two unmarried people living together, including adoption by the child's biological parent, regardless of sexual orientation. The court also said that the existing parent's rights are not terminated by the adoption. Susan established that the Massachusetts Family and Probate Court did have jurisdiction to grant Kate's adoption and remanded the case to that court. The Supreme Judicial Court saw nothing in Massachusetts' existing adoption law prohibiting Maureen and Ellen's joint adoption of Kate. Ellen, who had been Kate's mom for 4 years, would now also be a legal parent. Try explaining that to a four-year-old.
We got a phone call. Kate was 4 years old at the time. This was 1993. And so I remember having a talk to try to figure out exactly how we were going to explain this to her, because it's just so abstract to a kid who already knows who her parents are. But we were very excited, and she wanted to know why, and any previous attempts we'd made to try to explain it to her were like completely useless, because there was nothing tangible. But here we were, you know, with this victory and this decision that was going to make this possible. We felt like we wanted to really try to help her understand that this would be something good for our family. I remember trying to think of a way to say it in an age-appropriate way, but even so, after about two or three sentences, her eyes just, you know, it was sort of like she thought something great, like a present was coming or something, and we were all excited. And so once she realized there wasn't going to be something that concrete, she was like, okay, all right. That's the end of that.
Well, she didn't really get it, because we were her parents, you know, and she didn't have any sense that there was really any difference in the way we were her parents, or that there could be any difference, or, you know, she didn't have any sense that there are these legal rights out there and that there could be problems at all. I think she felt very secure, and, you know, she really, until she was somewhat older, I don't think she understood it on, you know, in very many terms, other than this was something good that happened and we were excited about it.
Unlike many of GLAAD's impact litigation cases, the adoption of Susan wasn't a constitutional case. It was about looking at the law as it's written, finding ways to interpret the law as written so two unmarried people, two individuals, could jointly petition to adopt. Mary Bonato.
The key argument, I think, for the Supreme Judicial Court was that there is an explicit statute that says provisions stated in the singular may be interpreted in the plural unless it is clearly contrary to the intent of the statute. And the intent of this statute was to promote the welfare of children. And there was no arguing that it was anything but beneficial to Kate to have Maureen and Ellen adopt her. So that really was the key thing. We were not inventing something new here. We were using something old and applying it in a new context. The Supreme Judicial Court accepted the view that we put forth, that the term person in the adoption law that says you may adopt if you're a person or a married couple, that there was no reason that a person could not include two persons. And there was nothing that disqualified these two from petitioning jointly. And it changed things here a great deal.
But these changes weren't only legal. The case also helped educate the public about the reality of lesbian and gay parents, their need to care for and protect their children. Mary Bonato.
You had a couple who'd been together for a very long time, who'd been very thoughtful about bringing a child into their lives, where both parents were deeply involved in raising her. So it was just, you know, a great window into what a good family can look like. And that was news to a lot of people. I know it's utterly mundane now, but that was news to people at the time.
Since the Susan decision, legal progress has continued. According to NCLR, as of May 2007, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Vermont, Washington State, and Washington, D.C., explicitly allow second parent adoption by same-sex couples, either by statute or court ruling. Lower courts in 15 other states have also granted second parent adoptions to same-sex couples, although the practice can vary by jurisdiction. And as of May 2008, in 7 states there is pending legislation that would help LGBT people adopt, including proposals in Florida and Utah to lift bans on adoption by gay men and lesbians. The common thread connecting these laws and court decisions is the recognition that, quite simply, adoption is good for kids. The legal, financial, and emotional security of having two legal parents clearly and unequivocally is in a child's best interest. GLAAD added to the list of adoption victories in Maine in August 2007. As the Maine Law Court, the state of Maine's highest court, wrote in its decision in the case Adoptions of MA and RA, a joint adoption assures that in the event of either adoptive parent's death, the children's continued relationship with the surviving adoptive parent is fixed and certain. A joint adoption also enables the children to be eligible for a variety of public and private benefits. Most importantly, a joint adoption affords the adopted children the love, nurturing, and support of not one, but two parents. Kate Wade Brodoff is now 19 and a first-year student at Bates College in Maine, where she's interested in American studies and sociology and plays on the varsity softball team. Ellen and Maureen went on to become plaintiffs in GLAAD's most prominent case, Goodrich versus Department of Public Health, which gave same-sex couples the right to marry in Massachusetts. They were one of the first couples to marry on May 17, 2004. Thinking back to the adoption case, Maureen says she hopes she and Ellen set a good example for Kate about standing up for what's important and what you believe in, about fighting for your family. It seems they have succeeded. During the Goodrich case, Kate spoke publicly and passionately about why her moms deserved the right to be married.
It made me feel glad that we had done something to protect our family, not just for its own sake, but because of the message and the lesson it gave to her about what's important, to work for your rights. If you want something and it's important, you go and you work for it. And that she felt that pride in us for having done that was very meaningful.
Thank you for listening to this GLAAD 30th Anniversary podcast. Special thanks to Seth Bernstein at Eidetic Production for additional audio recording. Visit www.glaad.org for more information on this story and to download a new podcast on the 15th of every month.